You are listening to Covenant Eyes Radio. Today's podcast may not be suitable for some audiences. Listener discretion is advised. 10 years ago today, the FBI searched the townhouse of Scott Tyree in suburban Washington, D.C., and found 13-year-old Alicia Kosakiewicz bound to a bed. She had been missing for 4 days. Now, a decade later, Alicia speaks with us about her experience of being deceived and groomed online by this predator over a period of 8 months, only to be abducted by him on New Year's Day and taken to his home.
I snuck outside to meet this person just to say hi, and it turns out that they were a monster. He had driven me to his home in Virginia and held me in his basement dungeon for 4 days, chained by a lock and collar, where I was raped and beaten and tortured. He was very abusive and extremely sadistic.
Alicia not only recounts her own horrific experience, but talks with us about what online grooming is and how important it is for parents to be aware of how their kids are using the internet. Well, Alicia, let's start by talking about what happened to you on January 1st, 2002. You were 13 at the time. You left your house that day to meet with someone. Tell us, who were you going to go meet and what happened to you over the next 4 days?
On January 1st, 2002, between dinner and dessert, I walked out my front door to meet somebody who I thought was my friend. Somebody I had been chatting online to for 8 months, and he became my best friend in the world, what it seemed. And I snuck outside to meet this person just to say hi, and it turns out that they were a monster.
What happened exactly?
Well, he had groomed me, and grooming is essentially brainwashing. It's taking you apart bit by bit and putting you back together into who this person wants you to be. And I'll get into that later, but it's so, so easy to groom somebody, especially a child, because all you have to be is that person's friend. And online, that is such a simple task to do. But I snuck outside to meet this person completely against my character, which shows evidence of the grooming. I'm terrified of the dark. I hate the cold with a passion. And yet, the coldest, darkest, iciest night of the year, there I am walking outside with no coat and no money, beating the door open, planning to come right back through it, just to say hi to somebody. And I walked just maybe half a block up my street, and I had a moment of clarity thinking, Alicia, what are you doing? This is really stupid.
Right, yeah.
And that moment of clarity, which came far too late, I heard my name being called, and next thing I knew, I was in his car, and he was squeezing my hand so tightly that I thought it had broken. And he was barking commands at me, be good, be quiet, the trunk's cleaned out for you. And you know, I'd seen movies. I'd talked to my mom about, you know, if somebody tried to take you or something, do what you can do to get away. But I knew that I was past the point of fighting. I knew that I was past the point of kicking, screaming, biting, doing whatever I could do to get away because I was in a moving vehicle. He had full control of me. I was 86 pounds and he was at least 300.
So where did he take you?
He had driven me to his home in Virginia and held me in his basement dungeon for 4 days, chained by a lock and collar, where I was raped and beaten and tortured. And I did whatever I had to do to survive. I knew that the only way that I was going to be rescued was to stay alive long enough to be rescued. And that was my goal. So I did whatever, no matter how painful or disgusting or humiliating, I did it. On the fourth day, he looked at me and he said, Alicia, I'm beginning to like you too much. Tonight we're going to go for a ride. At which point I knew that, okay, game over. I need to get out of here now. I need to do anything, even if it kills me, because I'm going to go down with a fight. And that, by miracle, was the day that the FBI rescued me.
Wow. How did the rescue go down?
Well, clearly not being in a very good state of mind at the time, I took them, these people, these men, downstairs banging on the door, and I mean banging and banging and banging, and thinking, they say we're here to kill me. And they were screaming, "We have guns, we have guns." And I hear them bust in, and I hear, "Clear, clear, 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 clear." Now, today I'd known with like Law & Order, SVU, and other television shows
right.
that, okay,
yeah.
they're cops. But back then, those shows weren't as prevalent, at least not to kids. We didn't watch them, really. And I rolled under the bed, completely terrified, and tried to hide. And I guess they heard movement. A gentleman walked over around the bed, and he put a gun to me. He told me to put my hands up. And all I had on at the time was a pair of panties. And I can remember trying to hold my hands up and cover my nudity at the same time and being completely embarrassed and just so completely overwhelmed. And he turned around, and I saw that the back of his jacket said FBI. And for a while, even though they're cutting me out of the chains and they're telling me, "You're safe, you're safe, you're safe," I'm thinking, "Oh, this is a big joke. This isn't real. This isn't real at all." And it wasn't until they took me out of the house that, you know, okay, I'm okay, I'm alive, this is really a miracle. He had left for work, and a lot of people say, "Well, why didn't you scream out? Why didn't you fight, try to jump out the window, do all these crazy things?" And the problem is that people can't understand a situation like that.
Sure.
So they've been
yeah.
in it. It brings me, like, to 9/11, when people had the choice to jump out of the building or stay and burn. You don't know until you're in that situation how you're going to react. And I had in my mind at the time that maybe, you know, I couldn't see him leave, that maybe he was just sitting right outside the door waiting for me to scream, and that was the moment that he was going to realize that I was going to be too big of a problem and he was going to kill me. You know, statistically, within 3 hours, a child, when a stranger abduction, you know, abused, raped, and murdered. And this was the fourth day. So this was an absolute miracle. But they had gone, it was around 4:20 that they busted in, almost 4:30. And he would arrive home at 4:30.
Wow.
So they arrested him at work. Had they not been there, had they been there a few hours later, a few minutes later, I may have not have been.
I know you've recounted your story a lot of times to school groups, to kids, to parents, to educators, to law enforcement officials. You've spoken your story a lot. This was not just something random that happened to you on New Year's Day that year. This is, like you mentioned, when you first crossed paths with this man, Tyree, you became acquainted, as you said, over the internet. Before this, and for a period of about 8 months, you fostered a relationship with this person. But describe that grooming process, as you describe it, this grooming process that you went through that led you up to that point. This wasn't just something that happened out of the blue. This was, he had conditioned you over a period of 8 months for that abduction. What did he do? How did he groom you?
Right, this was absolutely predator and unknowing prey. Grooming is such a simple process. It's just becoming, especially when it's a child, it's just becoming a child's friend. Something as simple as just always being there for them and always agreeing with them. For example, you get in a fight with your mom, which is kind of inevitable at 13, right? About not cleaning your room.
Sure, yeah.
And he's all, "Oh, your mom's a horrible person. How dare she try to make you clean your room? If it's her room, her house, she'll clean it." "Oh, okay, you're pretty cool." Or you get a bad grade at school, and you show him the answer that you got wrong, and he says, "Nope, this answer's right. You're really smart. You just think outside of the box. I'm really impressed by you. Wow." And your teacher's an idiot. And, "Oh, wow, okay."
Yeah.
"That's pretty cool." Or you get in a fight with friends at school, and he'll say, "Oh, well, have I ever called you these names? Have I ever hurt you like that? Have I always been there for you? Well, I'm your real friend." And after a period of 8 months of somebody doing this to you, you lose sight of yourself. You lose your family. You're getting pulled and pulled further away from the people who can help you. And it's constant. You feel special and beautiful and unique and really important to this person. And it feels like, I don't know, unconditional love.
So in the process of this grooming, Did the conversations, the online conversations, did they move sexual direction? Did they move there quickly, or did they not move there at all? How did that play out?
Often, when grooming takes place, you want to please this person so much because they've done so much for you. You feel like they're your best friend in the world, and you don't want to let them down. But you really start parroting whatever you feel that they want to hear. So it often does go towards a sexual direction.
Sure, yeah.
And especially because kids, in general, children are so sexually curious, especially with today in the media. How couldn't they be? It's all they see.
Right, yeah.
But they're so curious, and here's somebody that they can ask their most intimate personal questions. They will take the time to answer it, and they feel that they're really the most important person in the world to. So it does lead to a sexual direction, but often kids, at least I didn't know really anything of what I was speaking of. I was just parroting what he wanted to hear back because I thought that's what he wanted.
Sure. And so as you've traveled and talked about this topic to other people, I know you've run into to other kids who unknowingly are venturing into the same kinds of traps that you fell into. And by and large, do you see that their stories are the same in terms of how predators are grooming these kids online?
In my speaking engagements, I've had so many kids, boys and girls, come up to me, and it takes my story really, or story similar to mine, for them to realize it. They are so deeply involved and invested in this person that it's really hard to recognize. I've also had a lot of girls come up to me and say, yeah, I have met somebody online and they did hurt me. I thought that they were my friend. I thought they were this person. I thought they were that person. Then I went to meet them and they did hurt me. I can't remember if it was an all-girls school or not, but it was a group of kids who'd been through some trouble. This girl starts crying and crying in the middle of class, and she starts, Alicia, this happened to you, and it really brings light about what happened, what I did. I said, what did you do? And she said, well, a couple months ago, I met these two Marines from Virginia. They drove down, and they took me to a hotel room, and at first, it was all fun and friendly, and then they molested me.
Hmm.
I said, oh, my God, that's awful. Did you tell her? She said, yeah, I went home and I cried to my mom and I told her. And my mom said, you're a slut. And she said, Alicia, so what do you think I did? I said, what, hon? She said, I went out and I did it again because I'm a slut.
Yeah.
And we really have to think about, like, other people's prophecies. Parents really need to be careful about situations like this. They blamed my family and said, oh, your mom's a terrible mom, or you're a terrible child, or your dad raised you wrong. Then it couldn't happen to their perfect little prince or princess because they're a good parent and their kid's a good kid. So they're safe. And that's how it was really looked at. And I've noticed that start to change because who it happens to often are the good kids.
Yeah.
They're the ones who are curious.
Hmm.
The ones who've been around the block a few times who are street smart aren't curious. It's the good kids that get lured into this. It's the shy, quiet kids.
Well, you know, and I find it interesting. I was doing some reading on this recently, and I found it interesting. There was a, if you're familiar, with the Crimes Against Children Research Center. They've done a number of interesting studies on this, and there's one that came out of investigators. They conducted some telephone interviews with local, state, and federal law enforcement investigators in the period of October 2001 to July 2002. So right in the same time period of your abduction. And they were specifically questioning them about sexual offenses against minors that originated with online encounters. Same time period as your abduction and same kind of scenario, online grooming process. And they successfully completed 129 interviews with these law enforcement investigators. And they were trying to get a feel for exactly what happens online and what happens in the grooming process that leads to these kind of predation scenarios. And it same kind of thing with you. I mean, 75%, we're talking 13 to 15-year-old teenage girls. We're talking they met their offender in a chat room. Most of them did. Three out of four were meeting in chat rooms. They had most of them had communicated well over a month with the person. So most were in 1 to 6 month range. A few were a little bit more. So the grooming process took months of time to develop for most of them. 80% of them were bringing up things like sexual topics in the chat rooms. So again, similar kind of scenario with you. And many of them, most of them, went somewhere after they met with their offender. Actually, went with them to another location. I'm trying to get this across to our listeners here that your story is, in a sense, very typical of what happens in a lot of these online predation scenarios. The grooming process actually fits exactly what the offender wants to do with the victim. You know, in a case like yours, the person was clearly intending on abducting you. And so, you know, they lied about who they were. They lied about all that kind of stuff, gain your confidence in that way. A lot of cases, though, they have every intention to try to carry on a legitimate relationship, physical relationship with that person. And you actually find in some of these cases, the predation was so successful that in 50% of these cases, the victims actually reported at their rescue that they were in love with or were close with their victimizer. That their predation had actually gotten to a point, that their grooming had gotten to a point where even knowing who the offender was and having met with them on multiple occasions, they actually developed this strong connection to them. So they were coerced in a way that was even just as sinister as what you're talking about. But there's a variety of forms of predation that are going on today online. And parents need to be aware, just like you said, it's not happening to the so-called just the bad kids or the kids who, like you said, been around a while, been around the block, they know the lay of the land. You're talking about kids who are the quiet, shy kids who are willing to go out online and talk with strangers about their personal lives. And often, you know, that they because they don't have the discretion, because they don't have the street smarts, they're easily lured into these kind of conversations, into these kind of relationships, which are so damaging. And many parents are totally unaware of what their kids are doing. As you speak to parents, how many are aware of how prevalent this is?
When I first started speaking out, I've noticed that parents didn't know anything. I had one woman, in fact, say, "Excuse me, Alicia, I know exactly what my daughter is doing online." She gave me the email address for the house. As you well know, you have as many email addresses as you desire. That's changed a bit.
Sure.
But one problem that we've had with speaking out is that parents don't show up. American Idol is on or some other television show, and parents will not show up.
Yeah.
I raced home from my Congress testimony. I mean, they changed the docket order for me so that I could get home to this presentation, and there was maybe 6 parents in the room. And I congratulated each and every one of them for showing up, but it's been that way. I go into schools and I present to kids, and I don't want the parents in the room because I do things like have them be completely honest, and they're never going to be completely honest with me if their parents are in the room.
Sure.
So I have my mom take parents aside and do a parent presentation, and she'll do it for the one parent that's in the room. But it's often one or two parents that show up, and it's really sad. This is a problem that has to be looked at by all angles. Kids have to know what's happening. Parents have to know what's happening. And law enforcement has to be on top of the game. Teachers and everybody, everybody has to work here to protect kids because the Internet is a vital point in their life. It's everywhere. It's on iPads, on their cell phones. You can't escape it. It's everywhere. It used to be that, okay, you just turn off the desktop and your kid's safe. It's not that way now. We have to be extra vigilant and extra cautious because kids are going to make mistakes. I made a mistake. I was an average kid. And if I made it, I can tell you that any kid could make it.
You have been listening to part one of our interview with Alicia Kosakiewicz. In tomorrow's portion, Alicia will talk with us about the influence of sexualized media and pornography on the young generation. For more information, visit facebook.com/AliciaProject. I'm your host, Luke Gilkerson. To hear more of our podcasts, visit us on iTunes or visit the Covenant Eyes blog, Breaking Free, at covenanteyes.com/blog.